Don't spend another winter with your home colder than it should be. Hi, I'm Roy Spencer with PermaSeal. We measure the amount of heat loss and recommend solutions to keep it comfortable. Call PermaSeal for your free estimate, 800-421-SEAL, or visit permaseal.net.
Jim Gordon, Steve Bertrand here. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. We're going to talk to Terry Savage coming up in just a second. A little bit later, though, Scott Kleinberg joins us, as he does most Wednesdays. Scott writes about social media for the Chicago Tribune, and there's a study out on what we spend our money on when it comes to apps for our iPhones or Androids or whatever. It's all games. It's almost all games. Is that what you spend your money on when it comes to apps? A little bit later, too, we will talk to an Italian executive. There's a big symposium in Chicago today to boost U.S.-Italian trade, and I think there actually are 3,700 workers in this region who are employed by Italian manufacturing company. So we'll sort all that out. But first, we'll say hello to Terry Savage from terrysavage.com and just about everywhere else. He joins us on a phone line. Terry, welcome to the program.
Hello to you, Steve Bertrand, watching the markets react again to Janet Yellen today.
Right. Okay. So Janet Yellen, also there was an ADP jobs report ahead of the government's report, which was, they said, 200,000 private sector jobs, a little bit less than last month, but pretty much about what they were expecting.
Exactly. So we have an economy that continues to grow, you know, not too hot, not too cold, just right, Goldilocks. Actually, kind of a slow-growing economy. And that means the Fed, is probably what made the headlines this morning, Janet Yellen's testimony, that they can't really do anything about raising rates, and it's not likely to happen in April. And in fact, our own Fed President, Charlie Evans of Chicago, who's known for being what they call dovish, in other words, worried about a slow economy and not anxious to raise rates, spoke also talking about the fact that it doesn't look like the Fed can raise rates in April. So market moved up. Gold moved up yesterday dramatically. Take a step back today. And the market seesaws back and forth.
Is that phrase dovish, is that relatively new? I asked because it's such a sort of militaristic term, the hawk and the dove, and I just didn't, it seems relatively new that it's applying to Fed policy.
I suppose it's in the last, that's in more than a few years. It's used to describe those who want to, historically it's been used for those, the hawks fear inflation and want to move first to raise rates, slow an economy, keep inflation in check. And the doves think, wait, no, we need to stimulate the economy more. We don't want to be too aggressive. And so actually, if you look at the profiles of not only the Fed governors, but the regional bank presidents and the ones who are this year voting members, you can see the split between hawks and doves. But what's interesting, you're right about one thing. It used to be that
only
the Fed
one
governors
thing, Terry?
More than one thing, but in this area, the Fed governors used to speak and not say anything. You remember Paul Volcker's famous smoke rings and Alan Greenspan, the inscrutable.
Right.
And then Bernanke started making the Fed deliberations. They were revealed more quickly. They started having press conferences. And nowadays, you've got Fed governors, all of them, going out and making speeches. Of course, the Fed chairman is the most important, and she spoke at the Economic Club of New York, and everybody listens to that and testifies before Congress. And so, but you get some other questions of her from the economic the Congressional Hearing Committee. But at any rate, so now you get a better perspective of what each voting member thinks as opposed to what the proclamation is at the end of a meeting when it used to be kind of an opaque view, okay, the Fed is going to do this or not. Now you have a sense of the individual.
And because of that, we've seen sort of signs, I'm sure they always existed, but we're seeing signs now of sort of mini revolts within the Fed. Which is sort of another herd of cats that Janet Yellen has to corral.
Exactly. And probably the Fed chairman always did a little bit of arm twisting, but it was never quite so public. And also, I can't remember a time, and I've been watching the Fed back since Volcker, when the seesaw back and forth from month to month, I mean, economic growth numbers or inflation numbers or even the value of the U.S. dollar. This is a kind of a very choppy situation in terms of the economy and the market and jobs, and therefore you've got more room for disagreement on the Fed itself.
You're breaking up a little bit, Terry, just so you know, but is that a function of just the modern media, the fact that there's so much chatter and so many different outlets that everything can be analyzed and de-analyzed and overanalyzed?
Exactly. You know, I woke up at 6 o'clock this morning. Tell me if I'm breaking up now.
You're good.
Oh, my goodness. How did America come to this election fiasco? And in a much more minor way, you're seeing this with the Fed. The other thing, part B, Steve, is that the world is smaller. The Fed only used to worry about jobs and inflation. That was its written mandate from Congress. But now you see the Fed worried about the role of the dollar in the world and the global economy and what other central banks are doing. So the Fed's job's gotten more difficult and more public.
I want to talk to you in our next segment about the IRS and getting calls from them, because actually I had something happen to me last night that I want to kick around. But you also wrote a column at terrysavage.com about Social Security, and it's complicated. I'm not sure I understand it. But
yeah, that's a tough one. But let's talk about the IRS first, because they called me 3 times in the last 3 days.
Well, okay.
That's when I decided to write about it.
Well, I want to take a break before we do that. So we've got 45 seconds. Tell me just quickly about the Social Security. Can you do that in 45 seconds? I bet you can.
Yes. There's a strategy where couples who are now, the older one is full retirement age, and the spouse is at least age 62, where the older and presumably one with a bigger work record can file for benefits, suspend them, and then allow the wife, let's call it, the wife is the spouse, and she, when she reaches full retirement age, can collect on his benefits, a spousal benefit, and then delay her own benefit till age 70. It's a way to get 4 extra years of spousal benefits for certain couples who are at a certain age. The full details, and it was tough to explain, are at terrysavage.com. That is going away April 29th, May 1st, but April 29th is the last date if you fit this category. So if you think you're 62 and over and full retirement age now, and you both have work records, I think you should check out the column at terrysavage.com about Social Security deal going away.
Read the column. It is a little complicated. I read it 3 times, but not because you didn't write it well. I just enjoyed your prose.
No, believe me, it was tough to write. I had some great help on it. It says who qualifies.
No, it is. It's one of those. It's a difficult thing, but it's worth people paying attention to. All right, Terry, hang on a sec. When we come back, we're going to talk about this IRS scam that, you know, I'm getting the calls, too. All right. It's 12:23. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch here on 720 WGN, a Wednesday afternoon. It's a little dreary for a Wednesday. We might have some showers and storms around, but of course Terry Savage brightens our day every time she joins us. Wait, okay. So, well, there's 2 things. Let's talk about what you wrote about first, and then I'll tell you my story. But you have a column up at terrysavage.com and on Huffington Post about this scam where someone calls and they claim to be from the IRS. Now, this happened to me a year ago. My wife, Sharon, called me. She goes, you know, I've got this message. It was left, this angry guy from the IRS left a message, and here's the phone number, and you should call him. And, you know, and even though I know that I'm on the up and up and that it's probably a scam, you know, it still knocks you off your feet.
You think twice.
I called the guy, and he didn't answer me back. And finally, I looked up his office. I'm like, okay, it's clearly not. It's clearly a scam.
Yeah. You know, they say that they've received reports of over 1 million calls, that as many as 5,000 people have lost $29 million to this scam. And here's what happened. I mean, I know it's shocking. You get the call. The first one, I answered the phone and I went, and I just hung up. I don't say anything.
Oh, you're tougher than I am, Terry.
Okay, but the second time they left me a voicemail and I went, I'm going to keep this voicemail. Maybe this is a story. But this is all within 3 days. And the third time yesterday, I got a call and it got me so nervous that I picked up the phone literally to call my accountant thinking, I know he would call me if there was something. And lo and behold, at the same time, I decided to call the FBI first. And they told me that, in fact, there's a press release out 2 weeks ago. This is a huge scam. The IRS does not call you. They deal with you by certified mail.
And that's the important thing. The IRS is not going to call you.
Unless you're in the middle of an audit or something like that. Okay, they never make initial contact.
They're not going to send you an email.
No, and these are from foreign, and they don't send you emails either. Certified mail to your tax filing address. That's number one. But because it's not old people, by the way, I asked them, I said, this, you know, for a senior scam, they said, no, a lot of young people haven't had a lot of experience with the IRS. They have debt loads from school, and they're the ones that seem to be the most vulnerable. So just hang up, number one. If you think you might owe taxes, there's a number to call in this column I posted at terrysavage.com. And there is a website where they really would like you to take the phone number down. You know, it looks like it's coming. One came from New Jersey. One came from New Hampshire. One came from Connecticut, because I can see that on my cell phone when it rings. And so I that really made me suspicious. Besides the fact that the same heavily accented voice
it's almost like they
come after me from both New Jersey and New Hampshire.
But, you know, it's almost like they franchised it out, because it's happening so often. It's not like it seem like it'd be one ring.
Scam, and it's happening internationally. And the website, which you'll never remember, so go to terrysavage.com and read the column, is the Treasury Inspector General for Tax Administration has a website called www.tigta.gov, but you'll find it in this column. I think, in fact, I'll post it in the news section of terrysavage.com.
Check that out. Okay, so I finished my taxes. I wrapped up my taxes last night. I'm a TurboTax guy.
Good for you.
Yeah, and so I'm doing it, and, you know, I send them, and I get the text, welcome, they accepted your, and then I get an email from TurboTax saying, we think you might have used a different account this year. And I'm thinking, uh-oh, right? Because there have been so many cases of people filing on your behalf, and
right.
So I called them, and the guy, you know, I was responding to an email. So I called the guy, and we went through this, and he asked me, you know, where I'm filing. He asked me my name, my date of birth, and, you know, all the while I'm thinking he was from TurboTax.
And no.
Well, I still think he might have been, but once he got to my Social Security, I said, you know what, pal, I'm just not doing it. I think you're probably from TurboTax. I'm not giving you my Social Security number over the phone.
Perfect. That's the one thing everybody should know. Believe me, it's better to be safe than sorry.
It's just impossible.
It might have been a coincidence, but these phishing scams, P-H-I-S-H-I-N-G, phishing scams, proliferate around tax time, both the phone calls pretending to be from an agency enforcing a judgment from the IRS, and the ones confirming, you know, I got one about the importance of my Discover card, the da-da-da-da-da. It looks so official. By the way, I don't have a Discover card. Sorry, it's one of the few I don't have.
You know, but it's impossible to know. Let me tell you what, I got to go. But there's one other thing when it comes to fraud. My daughter goes to school at the University of Dayton in Ohio, so we drive through Indiana to see her. Every time I buy gas in Indiana with my American Express card, they cancel my card. For some security reason, they say, well, there's been a breach, or there's been this, or there's been that. So, you know, can be annoying on that side, but you just got to be hypervigilant, I guess, when it comes to it.
One last reminder. Go online, check each of your credit cards and your bank balances at least twice a week. Remember, you're not liable for these frauds, but you've got to find them and report them before they get too far.
You know, I've been troubled by it. I've had trouble. So thank you, Terry. I appreciate it. Thank you very much, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN, the Wednesday edition. If it's Wednesday, that means more likely than not, Scott Kleinberg from the Chicago Tribune will be in the studio. He writes about social media for the Trib. Scott, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Steve.
All right, how much money do you spend? First of all, I don't spend any money on apps, I don't think. I really don't think I do. How much money do you spend on apps a year?
You know, I would say probably, let's say, $15. But last year, $10 of that was on a weather app. So
that is your job, much. So you're, you know. But so I really don't think I do. If I'm searching for something for fun,
yeah,
my filter's free.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not going to pay for something.
Yeah.
But there's a study out or a survey out that says, what, we spend an average of $35 a year on apps?
Yes, $35 a year on apps, with $25 of that going to games. And honestly, I can't remember the last game I bought. Well, I can. Words with Friends, $2.99, and that was it.
Wait, did I have to? I had Words. Did I have to pay for that?
You don't have to, but the one that's ad-free costs a little bit more. I play it too much to have ads.
Right. So back to me. I have Words with Friends, and I'm sure I didn't pay.
Okay.
I'll look at the ads because ads pay my kids' college tuition.
Sure.
Yeah, and so I play solitaire, and which comes with everything. It comes, you know, comes with the newspaper. I mean, it's like solitaire is ubiquitous. But the idea of spending the money on games, I don't quite get. And it's way over. It's almost 75%, 60%.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And then after that, it's crazy because after that, the next category is music, and it's only $3.40. Now, what's not clear from the survey is I'm assuming music is music apps, not actual music, right? But still, $3.40, the next one from $25, you know, it's really interesting. It's a lot of money.
All right, so there's that. And, you know, it's significant because that's what companies are relying on now, right? That's a lot of companies making money off that, trying to do it.
Yeah, and in a lot of cases, you buy a game and then you buy things inside the app after that. So you get a new level or a new weapon or something like that.
A
so
new
that
shelter.
Could, that could entice people, yeah.
You buy, like, clouds to protect your sunman from the, or your snowman from the sun and
Sure.
Things like that. All right, enough of that. Let's go to the dugout. Baseball season starts next week.
Thank goodness.
And I was shocked until I read this memo from you that you can't have a you're not supposed to have a smartphone in a Major League Baseball dugout?
No, no. Apparently, it hasn't been until very, very recently that stats or anything like that really mattered in that sense. It's weird.
Well, no, that's not true, though. Stats matter hugely.
Only they do, but I guess they didn't think that they did or enough to, so you should have a
so you have to print them out or something.
I guess, I don't know. Of course, they definitely matter.
Well, that's why I ask, because like Moneyball and those things, it's all about statistics.
Yeah, most definitely.
And the teams now have statisticians who work with them, and but the idea that you couldn't have an iPad or whatever in the dugout until this year was shocking to me.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
You can this year because of a deal with Apple.
With Apple, yeah, Apple, and I didn't even know this was in the pipeline, so it was really interesting. Apple, Major League Baseball struck a deal, so they're going to have iPad Pros, the new iPads that just came out, the 12.9-inch fancy ones, and they're going to be in all the dugouts, and they're going to have fancy cases that are team branded, and they have a special proprietary app for stats. It makes me want to get into baseball. I mean, it's really, really cool.
Really? Does it make you want to get into baseball?
Maybe. If I could spend some time in the dugout with an iPad Pro and some play, yeah, I would do
that. So if there was an app available for $5, would you buy that with your iPhone?
Oh, I would definitely buy that.
See, we tied those two things together.
I have the Major League TV app. And
really?
I mean, I love that stuff.
Okay, so, but they have iPads for the NFL, right?
No, they have a deal. It's funny. The NFL has a deal with Microsoft for Microsoft Surface, which is not the iPad, but people call it the iPad.
It's iPad-like.
It's very iPad-like, and it's always been this thing where you have to have
the huge Surface. Marketing thing, right? So the NFL, every game, you see these players and coaches looking at their iPads on this, or no.
Surface.
Surfaces on the sideline, right?
Yes. But apparently, and for what I've seen, these players, they go on interviews and they say, oh, I was looking at my iPad. And it's like, no, you can't say that. It's not an iPad.
I love that.
I know. Me too. It's amazing.
Marketing gone bad.
Yes.
All right. So there's also a movement afoot. And this is a good thing, I think. You know, we always talk about increasing internet access to lower income people.
Yep. Yep.
And there's a news story about that on Huffington Post, right? That a broader sort of effort to get, computers or iPads in the hands of people, or what is it?
To get actual internet access in the hands of people. So a
faster
subsidized
internet,
amount.
And faster, too.
Well, faster is always the goal, but in this case, it's like $9.25 for families who actually meet the requirements to get $9.25 a month towards their internet. But there are all these people that are saying, and this has been pushed back months. I mean, it was in February, now it's supposed to happen tomorrow, this vote. And while that's a great thing, I mean, you want everybody to be online, what these people are, there are a lot lot of people that are saying, well, that's just the beginning. You give somebody $9.25 to get online, that's one thing. If they don't have the equipment because they can't afford a computer, some people are just using cheap cell phones to get online. And then they're saying, well, okay, that's great. You have this cheap cell phone with slow internet access and you're on. But how do you use that to apply for a job? How do you use that to update your LinkedIn? You can't. You need the equipment to go with the access. So people are basically saying, okay, well, you got this possibility here. We need to do more
to get people online. So it's some help, but it's not going to solve the issue.
Exactly.
And that's an FCC vote coming up tomorrow?
It's supposed to come up tomorrow, but like I said, it was pushed back a couple of months, so I don't know if it'll actually happen, but it's about time that it does.
The good news is if there are Instagram videos of those FCC meetings tomorrow,
yes,
we'll be able to see a full minute of them at a time.
A full minute. They were 15 seconds up until the other day, and now they are 60 seconds.
Because when I see my FCC commissioners vote, I want to see as much as I possibly can.
Yes, yes. You absolutely want to see four times the goodness, yes. And it's crazy because, 15 seconds was Instagram's idea to, that's enough video. But it's not enough video. Video is super powerful now. Everybody's doing it. You need a little bit more, and now it'll be a little more.
And their video watching has gone way up, right?
Oh, yes. Video watching all across social media has gone way up, but Instagram, too. I still think Instagram is the place for photos. I don't think video will ever overtake photos, but just the fact that you have more, because it's very difficult to fit something you do into 15 seconds and make it memorable or make it worth sharing.
Right, right.
When you have up to 60 seconds, things are very different.
And FCC commissioners, they can explain their votes in 1 minute.
Probably.
At least the introduction of their explanation.
Yes.
Scott Kleinberg from the Chicago Tribune writes about social media. Thanks for coming by today.
Thanks for having me, Steve.
You're listening to The Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Thank you very much, Laurie Vaughn. Steve Bertrand here. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. All right, Orion Samuelson had to leave a little bit early, but Kim Gordon did not, and she has her eyes on Wall Street today. Kim, what do the numbers look like?
Steve, the Dow's up 82 points, NASDAQ up 22, the S&P 500 up 8.
Thanks. We're waiting now for Luigi Gabaldini. He is the president of the European Association of Machine Tool Industries. How's that sound, Kim, for an exciting title?
That's exciting.
And they've got this symposium. It's called I3, and they're meeting in Chicago today. And they're going to talk about the various manufacturing industry. And, manufacturing is one of the things we talk about on this program a lot because while jobs have been growing in the service industry and that parts of the economy, when it comes to manufacturing, it has not been doing as well as many people would like. And there are efforts to change that, and there are efforts to increase trade with Italy. Now, when I think of Italy and economic trade, manufacturing equipment isn't one of the things that comes to mind first, but I guess they do quite a business with Caterpillar and things like that. I don't know. What do you think, Kim? I think
it's interesting. I mean, you always think of like food, wine, leathers. You don't think
right.
about big, .
I'm thinking pasta maybe, which is...
But that's where our mind always goes, so maybe we're just,
The small-mindedness
exactly.
of it.
Exactly.
Along with Fiat Chrysler automobiles, there are 89 Italian companies with operations here in Illinois, and they're employing almost 3,700 people in the state. And of those 3,700, more than 1,000 of them are in the city of Chicago. So it certainly is impactful when it comes to not just the city's economy, but the state's economy. And they're always trying to find ways to improve that. Now, we hope to talk to Luigi here in a second or so. We're just waiting for Luigi to give us a phone call. But, I organize groups to Italy, Kim, and we've taken trips there several times. And there is such a thing as Italian time.
Oh, yes, for sure.
And it's not always as punctual as we would like. So we're waiting for Luigi to come up on the...
We only wish we could be a little more like that, right?
isn't it true? I think we'd all be better off if we were a little less driven by the clock. Although not in this particular case.
Right, not in this particular case. Italians would just pull up and sit down and have a cappuccino or a glass of wine right. and not think twice about it,
at
right?
At this exact moment, I wish Luigi was working on New York City time, but apparently that's not the case, so we're waiting for him to call. I have not been following too much of the stories in the world of business, but are there anything else that we should be aware of today?
Well, just this thing with Boeing, Chicago-based Boeing,
yeah.
They're moving a lot of their jobs to the southern states. Apparently, it's cheaper, minimum wage is cheaper, and I guess, that's a big hit for the people of Washington State. It's thousands of jobs.
So they're, but they're not just moving jobs, right? They're cutting. Is it 30,000 jobs or so?
They're cutting, but they're also moving about 4,000, I think, to the southern states. And then also just the fight for, you know, 15 is coming back in April. They're supposed to be having a big rally. And it's interesting that the fast food workers are deciding that they want to target McDonald's this time.
So they're going to target, well, they always seem to target McDonald's, but this time it'll be exclusive?
Well, specifically is exclusive to McDonald's. Oak Brook-based McDonald's says that they're going to keep the stores open. They're planning the rallies in several cities, and it's going to happen the day before tax day.
You know, it's kind of a new movement or a new development. Maybe it's not new, but it seems focused right now when it comes to work stoppages that, you know, we're not having the undefined walkout. We're having the defined one-day walkout, right? We're all bracing for the Chicago Teachers Union on Friday, but there's one coming at O'Hare a little bit before that even.
Exactly. That's starting tonight. And actually, you know, speaking of Italy, that's very much the European way. You know, they'll do these one-day walkouts and strikes when they're unhappy. It's happened several times to me when I've been in a European airport. So, you know, maybe we are taking a cue from the Europeans.
It caught me in Spain, too. I was in the south of Spain and wanted to take a ferry over to Africa just for a day, and there was a one-day strike there. And you're right, so maybe that's the new way to do it. Well, we're joined now on the telephone by Luigi Gabaldini, who is the president of the European Association of Machine Tool Industries. Luigi, welcome to the Business Lunch.
Thanks to you. Hello to everybody.
How did I do on the pronunciation there? Was I okay?
Perfect. You're perfect.
I
will be the same in English.
I don't think I was perfect, but I'll take it. So I saw a picture of the Prime Minister Enzi in town jogging with Mayor Emmanuel earlier today. You weren't in that crowd, were you?
No, I was not jogging this morning, but the Prime Minister told us that he was doing some jogging with him. And so that's good for friendship and for relationship, I guess.
All right, so tell me about what the relationship when it comes to Illinois and Italy in trade, because, you know, you don't think necessarily of an individual state and another country, but it is a sort of important relationship.
Yes, you're right. We are not, when we're talking of, let's say, Illinois, we're not really thinking to Illinois, but mainly to U.S. in general. We can say that Chicago is the manufacturing center of the nation, of your nation, and so that's why we are here. I just want to remind the people that are listening to the radio that we have also IMTS, which is the most important American show, which is every 2 years in Chicago. So that's the reason why we're here.
Oh, there's also the I3 gathering today, and that's where the Prime Minister is going to be, and you're going to be. What's your goal out of it? Are you trying to get business in Italy, or are you trying to get business for Italian companies in Chicago?
But more the second of what you said. This is for sure. We have to say that for machine tools, United States is the first country of export for our machines, and so that's very important market, very demanding market, and we are doing pretty well. If you imagine that last year we increased our sales of 25% towards this country, and so we are thinking to the American market in general as a whole, not just to Illinois or any other state.
You know, when we think, Luigi, about the Italian economy, and this speaks to our ignorance, you know, I think food, I think wine, I think, you know, the sorts of things that I have day-to-day interaction with. But what is it about the Italian economy that you would like Chicagoans to understand that you think they probably don't?
But I would say that what you said is perfectly right. In general, people, common people, all of us, I would say, what we know is what we see, and what we touch with our hands, or what we use. So this can be sports cars, or fashion, or food, or you know, design. These are, the Italians are known for that. But we have to consider that in machine tools and in machinery in general, we are the third exporter in the world. So the country is little, but this means that we have some characteristics that are really made for the foreign markets and for American market mainly. So what I would like the American public that is listening to us remember is that Italians have probably the most peculiar characteristics are two. The first is that we are very good in handcraft. So a machine tool is something that it cannot be made in a standard way. So it means we have to put a lot of brain and a lot of ability in what we're doing on the machine itself. And second, we are very good in listening to the need of the customers, not hearing what they're saying, but listening. Mm. So this means we are listening what they need, and we are trying to translate it into performances.
So you think you might go back to Italy with more business for the country?
Not directly. This is not for sure, but I would say that this meeting would reinforce the idea that the American companies have of our sector.
Luigi Gallardini is the president of the European Association of Machine Tool Industries. Will you indulge me a really corny question? Corny is a phrase here where you say kind of silly. Have you had any Chicago pizza yet?
Excuse me?
Have you had any Chicago pizza since you've been here?
No, not yet, but I've been in Chicago many other times. I can tell you that I've been in Pizza Hut several times. And, okay, the food is good. It's not the same pizza you can have in Naples or in Milano, that's for sure.
Is it as good?
It's not as good, really, frankly speaking, but you have a lot of other things that we cannot find in our country.
I'd be disappointed if you said it was, Luigi. Thank you for calling us today. I appreciate it.
Thanks to you, and thanks to everybody.
You bet. You're listening to The Business Lunch on 720 WGN.